You are listening to Waiting on Reparations, a production of iHeartRadio.
Get out the way, Mitch. Get out the way. Like, move, Mitch. Get out the way. Get out the way, Mitch. Get out the way. Like, move, Mitch. Get out the way. Yeah, 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 yeah. 2020's in the past. May the good die young. It's a new day. And for now, the good guys won. We made Georgia blue. And Republicans mad. They're sure to sue. And we can't rest on our laurels now. Because there's more to do. Because we got the Senate in the House. So tell Mitch McConnell not a word out his motherfucking mouth. They don't like democracy. They'll go another route. So in about 2 years, yeah, we got to shut them out. But now, we stop with the preaching the choir. Dangle Biden by the arms, hold his feet to the fire. Warnock did his thing, something we should admire. But y'all get primaried if we see you a liar. You will need to retire, you receiving the ire. We was calling a truce cause the situation was dire. You was thinking it's sweet, and that's something really y'all should doubt. They said y'all radical, I wanna see what they talking about. Hey, my name's Dope Knife.
I'm Lingua Franca.
And we are waiting on reparations.
Hurry up!
So, we won.
Yeah. So, okay, so there's a little bit of background on, like, the last couple of days for me. Monday night, myself and Paul, who will be joining us later, a little later on the show, met up in Atlanta and got in the car and proceeded to drive around the state of Georgia for 12 hours, putting up yard signs in, like, five different counties. And so, and then we went back to Atlanta and I had just like a normal work day.
Well,
and
shit.
So, I'm completely dead inside. Very excited that Mitch McConnell is going to be Senate minority leader and that we have two senators elect here in Georgia that we will be able to push towards things like universal health care and ending the war on drugs by ending federal funding for narcotics task forces and things like that.
Well, I was just about to...
I just want to make that clear from the top.
Well, I was about to ask you about that. Don't worry, we're gonna take it easy on you today because, like, one of the whole things about this episode is, like, shining a light on some of the work that you've been doing. You know what I'm saying?
I'm also getting sworn into my second term as commissioner at 4:30 today. So it's just like...
See, your girl is out there working hard, y'all. Great. So, okay. Well, I mean, today we're going to be, you know, just getting some insight from Mariah on the work that she did in this campaign, some of her feelings about how it's turned out. And by campaign, just for the sake of due diligence, I'm talking about the recent Senate elections as well. We're also going to be talking to the deputy campaign manager for Daniel Blackman, who is running for public service commissioner? Candidate for public service commissioner. We're going to be just getting a little insight on how that campaign went and everything like that. But with this win for Warnock and Ossoff, the apparent win for Ossoff, I don't want to jump the horse. What does that mean for Democrats and, like, how can progressives eventually leverage that?
Well, what it means for Democrats is that they don't have any excuses for not getting anything done as, you know, they tried to... under Obama when they, you know, in his first 2 years had the House and the Senate and the executive and, like, all we got was, like, the ACA when we could have been tackling climate change, like, 10 years ago. Could have done so many things and didn't because no one was paying attention. But now we are. And so it means that the sky is theoretically the limit. I think this is where social movements then come in to create a clear mandate, like, for what the people need, making it clear that we are watching. It is exciting that we have senators-elect that we can actually hold accountable. Like, Kelly Loeffler wasn't accountable to shit. Like, David Perdue, are you kidding? And so I'm very, 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 very excited to fight the Democrats and not the Republicans, finally. So, it means, $2,000 checks. Hopefully that is now the floor. We can make that recurring and retroactive to last March. Things like marijuana legalization.
Minimum wage.
Maybe $15. Yeah, there's no excuse for them to not just go ahead and get these done. And in fact, it would behoove them to do so because treading lightly when you have such a narrow margin of victory as these gentlemen had is an easy way to lose. I think... whose seat is up in like 2 years? I think
it's a Warnock.
Yeah. So, like, if they sit around and do nothing for 2 years, like, he's gone.
I mean,
he's gone. And so, gone. Like, it behooves them to go ahead and get it done, you know, double the minimum wage, legalize it, close private prisons. Like, let's really do this. Like, sure, they might not be for Medicare for all, but let's go ahead and get steps towards expanding, protecting the ACA, getting a public option. Just like, go ahead and do that this year to set the stage for truly universal healthcare in years to come. So that in 2024 or whatever, 2020, I don't know what year it's about to be. So when you come back around and ask for everybody's votes again, you can tell, give them clear, like, yo, we did it.
And not tangible.
Well, we couldn't because, you know, Mitch McConnell or anything. There's no reason why. There's no reason why they can't or should.
They got to have, like, tangible benefits, you know what I mean? And changes to their lives for all the work that
it's. Yeah, so you the party of working people, fucking show us. Like, do it. And if you don't, fine. If you really don't want to, fine. But, like, that's the end.
I mean, like, primary motherfuckers.
Or, you know, get ranked choice voting passed in places like Georgia, where Republicans now see the dangers of a runoff, mm-hmm. challenging their, you know, their vice-like grip on our governance structures. And
I just thought about
stopping it. Like, yo, let's do this.
So now, after the presidential election and then these Senate elections, like, Georgia is, like, officially blue now. So
I mean, we still have a Republican controlled legislature.
Okay.
I would also, I mean, to me, the local is very important. And so I would also look at the makeup of our county commissions. It's not like, you know, LA or Detroit or Chicago, where it's, like, Democratic controlled, like, local governing bodies either. And so, like, that's really important for things like,
well, since that's what you're like, I know that's something that you really care about. Like, what can be done to, like, to make that the case? Like, how can we start getting people more engaged for, you know, in elections that aren't having $500 million spent on them?
To outside of elections that have $500 million spent on them?
Yeah, like, what can we do to get people more engaged in their local and to care about the local makeup? You know, because, I mean, if people were burnt out after the presidential election and we had to, like, get on people's asses and, you know, you were out there doing the work that we're about to get into to, like, get people to actually be engaged with the smaller election in this past Senate election, then it's like, how do we get people even further engaged and less burnt out to where they're being involved in their local politics and stuff?
Yeah, well, I mean, I believe Charlene Carruthers put it that, you know, good leaders in good movements create new leaders. Like, that's the goal. And so through my work, which I'll talk a little bit more about in a second, but, like, my general principle for, like, the way I move through the political world is that, like, you bring people in at the ground level to teach them the mechanics of organizing, such that they learn how to work, like, how to get to build coalition, to build support for ideas, to learn to talk about ideas, and to learn how to talk about process, such that they then have the tools themselves to run for something like county commission, to run for state house, or to, you know, to go from being just a canvasser where you're paying to knock on doors this time around to being a field manager for someone's state house campaign or a congressional campaign. And so I think that a lot of people that, like, might vote reliably Democratic previously, but, like, given the fervor around this election cycle, might have hit the pavement for the first time knocking on doors or text banking or, you know, whatever forms of get out the vote they were participant in. Like, now they know how to do that. And now they can be the one that's leading that effort and bringing new folks in. Now they are the ones that can be putting that expertise to work in running and winning their own campaign. So that's at least my hope for, like, the broader win out of all of this.
Yeah.
As well as just, like, what I try to do all the time.
Word. Okay, so we're going to get into the specific work that you were doing after the bump. All right, so Mariah, so just pretend that somebody is listening to the show for the first time and they don't know exactly what it is you do other than host this podcast. Like, explain to them, what is your position in the city of Athens, Georgia? And then how did that extend into the work that you were doing for the elections this past few months?
Yeah, I am Athens, Georgia's scariest radical liberal. I can't wait for the day that I run for something bigger and they like make my skin look darker in the attack ads like they did, like Loeffler did for Warnock. So I'm county commissioner, have been since 2018. But outside of that, I got my start in politics. I hold office now because someone tapped me to run their campaign, and I learned how to do that and talk about policy such that I was like, oh, I can do this. Like, I'm going to run for office. What's up? And so the idea behind this project I've been working on for the last like 6 weeks, Athens Progressive Canvassing Corps, marries the need for that sort of entry level experience building among just folks that are underrepresented in politics. Understanding of just like what wins elections, which is just face-to-face voter contact, and it's easiest to reach people at their homes. And the fact that people are fucking broke right now because they gave us $1,200 like 8 months ago and we're like, good luck with your eviction and stuff. And so wanting to pay people a living wage to do this work, because as local elected officials, our hands have been very tied by state statutes preventing us from providing direct relief to our constituents. So it's like, all right, I can't just cut you $1,000 check. I can pay you $1,000 if you are out of work. Yeah. And want to just like walk around your neighborhood and talk to people about, where they can go vote. And so we recruited a bunch of people, very diverse coalition of like students, like working class, folks of color, some seasoned organizers, some that were very, very new to this, had no idea what canvassing even was when they started. Folks, on the brink of eviction, experiencing food insecurity, like got kids at home that just like needed work to do and needed it before the pandemic.
Yeah.
That's the thing, like needed it before all of this. And so bringing those folks in, because they're probably not paying attention to what's going on in the county commission, not because they're dumb, but because they're working
real life.
$7.25 an hour than trying to, teach their fourth grader math at like 10 o'clock at night. Like, I wouldn't either.
Yeah.
And so, so we hired on a team. I think it was ended up being about 20 like core canvassers. To go out into their own neighborhoods and knock on doors and talk to people about the importance of this election. We raised about $25,000. Big shout out to the Progressive Campaign Change Coalition. They ran a fundraiser for us and raised about $3,500 for us, in addition to what we were able to get through our own campaign networks, our being myself, two other county commissioners, our mayor, and our state house representative, Spencer Fry. And so over the course of the last 6 weeks, we went out and knocked on about 32,000 doors all around Athens, which is interesting because 32,000 is almost exactly the number of votes that Warnock, Ossoff, and Blackmun were able to get out of our city.
Well, you don't win an election this close without those margins actually mattering. You know what I'm saying? It's not like this was a blowout or anything. So every bit of it matters. I mean, do you look back at it now? I mean, obviously, they won, so it's a success in that way. But do you see it as something that, like, you can break out again for more elections?
Yeah. Now I know Javi, who is the, Oberlin student who was home from Athens, born and raised here, but never participated in electoral politics before, who knows how to talk policy at the door and knows how to work the minivan app and, like, knows who her commissioners are. And so, like, next time around, when, like, a commission race comes up in her district, like, we got somebody on the ground that can train new volunteers to do this work. We got, James and Alina and Eric, who were fresh out of high school, born and raised in Athens, that knocked on, I think when I saw them on Monday, it was like Monday at 2 p.m. and they knocked on 200 doors that morning. A bunch of like 17 and 18 year olds. Like, what they're going to be doing in 10 years, like, think about that.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that to me, like it's important that everyone get $2,000 checks. And like, hopefully we can like get, if not a Green New Deal, like a substantial infrastructure / climate like plan out of these people. But we don't get there if we don't train new people to like be part
engaged.
of sustaining pressure, of helping build additional power, through other offices that like help support that work, you know. So
yeah,
I don't know, like it's great that we won, but so, it's not about that for me, to be completely honest.
I organize pretty hyper locally in the grand scheme of a state here in Athens, but there's a lot of great work being done by folks who go everywhere, who go to the places like where no one, that everyone counts out, to like help build organizing infrastructure there, to help elevate organizers into candidates, and who have been doing the work for far longer than I have. And so I'm really stoked to have one of those people with us today. Paul Glaze, Deputy Campaign Manager for the Daniel Blackman Campaign for a Public Service Commissioner, to talk a little bit about what he did, both in this race before, and shout out some of our colleagues within the Georgia political ecosystem that we got to hang out with last night as we watched the results come in. So yeah, we'd love to get your take. Thanks for being here.
How you doing, man?
I'm okay. I'm okay. It's a very, there's a lot of emotions today. And I think that, honestly, I'm just really happy that Georgia showed up. I'm really happy we do have, I guess, control of the Senate, I think is the best way to say that. And it was, after having just spent, so you got to understand that, like, this is my fifth election night this year. Like, if you count this little bit of 2021 as the end of 2020, I worked three different campaigns, and two of them had runoffs. And when you do a statewide race, you get to organize with so many people, as like me and Mariah was just mentioning. And it's really one of like the gifts that electoral politics can give you as an organizer, is the ability to go to a lot of different communities and meet the people who care and who are fighting for stuff. So right now that network has been strengthened a lot. So I think even if we had lost a lot of people on the ground, but actually still feel pretty good about this cycle.
I definitely would have, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, because, and that's a real thing. Sometimes whole cycles go by and no good, like, it's this one period of time where all of your actions get a lot higher return on investment. And so you have an ethical responsibility to use that intentionally. And there's whole cycles where people don't even care enough to try. So, like, the regardless, we did that successfully. Everyone feels pretty good about it. Daniel, however, is still in the throes of wondering when we're going to find out the results. Right now, Bubba McDonald is ahead. And in fact, he has more votes than both of the Republican Senate candidates and all of, I'm pretty sure, maybe not Warnock. I can look that up real fast. But he has, I think, the most votes of anyone. Oh, no, yeah. No, he beat out everyone except for Warnock.
So why did he overperform the other Republicans?
That is the million-dollar question. And actually,
I've heard a lot of takes on that, you know, that he didn't hitch his wagon to Trump. And so for some that have become disillusioned with the new direction of the party, like, he seemed like a, you know, a solid Republican to get behind. Sexism, you know, people who voted for Perdue and McDonald, but not Kelly Loeffler because they hate women, which, like, whoops. I don't know for sure, but, like, I think these things are interesting and probably work together.
I think we can rule out the Trump theory because Bubba McDonald was co-chair of Donald Trump's campaign. So of the people that paid. Now, that being said, there's a whole subset, I think, of Trump's voting populace that really don't pay attention. Like, they're there, they've had an emotional draw. He's gotten them. They are an audience for him now, for his brand. But they're not necessarily political people, which is really normal. We you know, kind of derisively refer sometimes to, like, certain types of soccer moms that are, you know, gung-ho for Democrats, will wave the flag, will, you know, get out there and put their sign in their yard proudly, and yet still harbor deep resentment towards people of other races. You know, like, that's a phenomenon that we know on our side exists. And so I do think maybe that group of people, you're thinking, like, disaffected white guy in his, like, mid-30s trying to grapple with the fact that he has no opportunities in his town, and feels like he can't ever achieve his life dream. Like that set of people, I can definitely see, drawn to that. But the people that pay attention would all know that this guy literally co-chaired the campaign for Georgia. So we still have a problem. We still have a problem there. I do think that there's a lot of people that really are inspired more by a local candidate that's talking to the scale of the actual issues, someone that they are familiar with, someone who has spent years coming to their community and has local community members to vouch for them. When we look at these numbers, it's pretty easy to, it's easy to get down on yourself about a loss. But as of right now, Daniel has just under 50,000 votes less than David Perdue. So when you think about the money that Daniel spent, and you think about the money that was spent on David Perdue, the fact that those have parity proves a lot about the strength of organizing here. It's hard sometimes to know if there's like analogous situations on the Republican side, because by and large, we're a party. If you're looking at Democrats, we are the party where the vast majority of people of color are. And so this is kind of it's gross to say, like it used to be like a couple of years ago, you would bring this up, even if you got, tiptoed towards it, people would start to get offended. But this is the literal structural problem when Democrats are not involved in rural white communities. Like, this is what it looks like once the impact happens. And you don't have to prioritize them, but if you're not even in them with credibility, then you don't really know what's going on. So now we have to have this whole conversation trying to piece out. I mean, this is going to be a question for the next 4 months. People right now are being paid mountains of money to answer that question. I feel like just us sitting here talking are going to get closer to the truth. And typically that has proven right in my organizing. And then it always frustrates people that spend lots of money on other people, that they could have just had good conversations and probably gotten pretty close to there. So I don't know. That might have been a rambling answer to what we were talking about. But I do think we can rule the Trump one out. There's a lot of stuff there, though. I'm definitely with Mariah on... we're about to see a wave of white feminist organizing around the issue of sexist Republican men who wouldn't vote for Loeffler. It's going to be a conversation conversations like this that don't always like have the virtue of being on a podcast on iHeartMedia, and it's happened.
I guess with the vote still, with the count still, out, what do you envision like your next few days looking like?
Mostly I'm trying to do the normal things, which is make sure my people are paid, make sure all bills that need to be paid, the normal businessy side of things. That's all got to get handled. And I like to try and be the person that does that, because it gives people who are incredibly tired a moment to breathe. For many people, including our campaign manager, we've been doing this straight all year.
And for years. Year in terms of on these particular projects,
but this
is also 5 years in the making.
Because the only way you can keep doing it is if you just commit to making it a significant portion of your life and structuring your life around it. You have to. It's the only way, because it's such a time commitment and so much of your thought goes into it, trying to be good at it, because, for good reasons, you want to represent yourself well. And even if you don't want to represent your community, you always represent your community. There are so many people that do politics that don't have a sense of community that it's easy to get caught up in living your life in a way that makes sense dealing with them. But the truth is that everyone else, whether you're, you know, we moved around so much when I was a kid. Like I never really got to have like a hometown until, I don't know, like preteen years. Like before that, we lived in like 5 or 6 different places. And I love all those places. But you know, you gotta, the older you get, the more you appreciate how short a time, you know, 5 or 10 years is. And it means something.
I don't know if this is going to be a working segue. This is also just piggybacking off of like when you asked me earlier, Mac, like what I do. And so, and I also wanted to talk about last night. So, you know, we rolled up with the Black Men Campaign to this bar on Buford Highway in Atlanta to celebrate what we're looking like hopeful returns with some organizers that we know from all around the state who'd come together to watch the results come in. And so hanging out with Khalid Kamaya, not Khalid Kamaya, that's, he lives in Athens. Khalid, what's Khalid's last name?
Kamal.
Oh, wait, no. I'm thinking of Kamaya Hall. Okay, sorry. Bleh. Hanging out with Khalid Kamaya, who's been heading up our revolutions efforts here in Marina, a little bit outside of Atlanta. Michelle Sanchez, who's done a lot of organizing in North Georgia and done a lot of work around Latinx mobilization for this election.
And just finished up being the coordinated campaign's director for it.
Yeah. And I just want to talk about this particular moment that I think is like very, speaks very much to like my brand of politics and like what I think like the future needs to look like of politics. So like we were all in this bar and like most people were watching like a football game. And then like the TV right above our heads was tuned into CNN and watching the election results come in. And when it flipped, when Warnock took the lead, when Ossoff was tied with Perdue, our little section of the bar, everybody started like cheering and like dancing and hugging. And like all the other people in the bar kind of like looked over like what's going on and all started cheering too. They're like, oh, cool. Yeah. Like they didn't give a shit. But like first they saw that we were really excited and they got really excited. And I think that is like very emblematic of what the work is like. Like when you get wins in, people get excited and want to try more. And also when you make politics fun, when you make it like a party, when you make it average people like hanging out, eating wings and drinking like cocktails at a bar on Buford Highway, like people find an easy entry into it. And so like I think that is also what I do. And a lot of what I, you know, a lot of what Michelle was doing with like Posada to the Polls, getting like DJs out and like food and like just kind of like block party vibes. Is like really essential to this work. But I didn't know, Paul, if you wanted to speak more about your relationship with these folks and the work that they've been doing in the state over the last couple of years, because it has been a long time coming. And I think in this moment, there are certain faces that are rising to the top of our like liberal media narratives that like they did a lot of work, but like there's so many other people that also don't get zero shine just because the work we do is so thankless and like menial seeming at times of just like actually going and knocking on the doors and like staying up late and driving around the state, putting up the signs, etc. So I just wanted to give you a chance to like chat those folks out, talk a little bit about how you know them, what they do.
Yeah, thank you so much. Also I really grateful to that bar because it was a great environment. Obviously, for those of you who don't live in Atlanta, Buford Highway has the best like food of every culture. Like it's a very long road, and pretty much if you want the best Cambodian food, Thai food, Indian food, food from any of the Latin countries, I am sure, like Central and South America, you go there. And it's important. So when our revolution wanted an election night live stream, that goes, you know, that's one thing. It goes on their Facebook page. That's like, but you know, usually there's like 500 people watching and their Facebook page is 500,000 people. So we need people like Mariah in office. We need people, like you, Dope Knife, to step up, because
he looking, no, just for the listeners, his face got like his eyebrows scrunched all the way down to his nose when Paul said that. We gonna get him one day, though. We gonna get him in there.
Again, I don't think I'd let you off the hook on that. Yeah, I'm now your Jewish mother in politics. I'm constantly going to be questioning your ambitions and whether or not they are high enough. But it's important to us to make sure that whenever we have resources, whenever, so like let's, and an easy resource is like our revolution letting us do a live stream on their Facebook and sending out an email to tell people to tune in. That's a huge opportunity. So our people are the people that ran the coordinated campaign's Latinx outreach. That's Maria Del Rosario Palacios, who is the person who got me into community organizing when I was in college. I don't mean to talk for people listening like that was forever ago, because that was, I'm 27, I'm about to be 28. But when I was like 20, Maria and I were in college at Gainesville State College, home of the Fighting Geese. That was actually our mascot, but luckily we were so small and poor, we didn't have a football team. So no one had to honk it in stands as their, you know, as their school spirit. But basically, the dreamer generation, the DACA kids of Gainesville, came of age. And it was very important to them on a basic honorable level to be civically engaged. They felt a very strong, they still feel a very strong commitment to that this is what their parents, this is what their parents earned. And they needed to validate that. And we had a multicultural student affairs office in the college that wanted a media person. And I was in school for theater and film. I was in a film class. Department sent out an email like, hey, there's this opportunity, $14.50 an hour, $15 an hour. Which, you know, to a college kid, you're sitting there going like, hell yeah, $15 an hour. And I get to like help people. Great. Sign me up. And I get over there and this woman, I swear to God, I take almost every opportunity I can to lionize this woman because it is mind-blowing to see the amount of work she does. This woman will keep working, honestly, until it could like potentially start to hurt her. And then you have to like tell her, like, hey, it's good. You know, you've done enough. But basically, Maria was a working mother of a young kid in school, twins on the way, and the DACA kids have to pay out-of-state tuition, which makes even this community college cost prohibitive. But these kids felt honor-bound, and so they all took 2-3 jobs, whatever they had to do. And while she's doing that, and organizing with the students, like Maria and I basically created a student activism environment at our school. One had not existed. Every once in a while, this one club would do something. But we managed to get that going. And even like wildly successful. I mean, like for what it was, we actually got our school on Bill Maher once. Where he said, new rule, University of North Georgia has to change its name to Cracker State. And home of the flying mullets. And it was our Nighthawk with a Joe Dirt mullet. And they sold hoodies. So those are the people that got me into community organizing. Our town has at-large voting, so everybody can vote for everybody in the city. So literally, like, they segregate the entire Black community into one district. Black community puts up a candidate. Magically, some teacher is convinced to run, and all the white people vote for that candidate, so that candidate wins. And that's how it's always been. And that's the fight that I was, born into. And so she is actually now, honestly, there are multiple organizations that owe a lot of their shit to Maria doing things.
Anybody else you want to shout out?
Yeah, of course. Michelle Sanchez is a friend of ours. She was the first Latina to run in South Hall County. She ran the Progressive Turnout Project operations for the general election and is now, well, I guess until whenever this is certified, whenever this campaign is done, she is the coordinated campaign, which is the Senate campaign's Latinx outreach director. And Maria backs her up on that. And then obviously Councilman Khalid, who is the head of our Revolution Georgia, their efforts here for the runoff. He and I, you know, went to them and said, no, you really need to hire local organizers. We don't, you know, we shouldn't be bringing other people in. Y'all don't know this shit. Like, which is a case that has to be made. And then like, finally someone will come in and really get it. And then they go, oh, they're like, okay, thank you. And I'm like, I promise you, it'll be good. Just trust us. And Khalid's running for mayor of South Fulton, which, I am legally obligated to, say is the blackest city in America. And
we're going to have Khalid on soon. We've got like an interview with him.
Yeah, we do.
Like 3 a.m. one time to send around somewhere.
Khalid is one of the OGs. Khalid is one of the people that showed that you could be authentically progressive and run for office in Georgia. And I have, in terms of this, what this newer definition of progressive is, and I don't want to exclude the work of all the people that have been doing this for decades. But it's incredible. So I'm excited for that one.
Organizing extends into the realm of the arts. Last year, you co-founded the Atlanta Artist Relief Fund.
Yeah, my background's mostly in the theater community with some in the film community. And it's really nice because between Daniel and myself, then we like have credibility with a majority of the community. Daniel with music, and then me from the like acting performer side, technicians. I've never been like a roadie, but that is one of my jobs. And we, when COVID hit, we founded an organization that started off as a mutual aid effort. And then at a certain point, people didn't want to do all the administrative work. And it was, we weren't able to keep scaling in any way. And when you have a moment like that with COVID, that's an organizing opportunity. Like, there's a window of opportunity there to get in with authenticity and credibility and do good work while people are paying attention, because they'll stop paying attention. They always do. There's always a new crisis. So you only have that window of time to get whatever funding you can and give it to the people that are best suited to do it. So we got in there. The entire theater community was pretty much just like paralyzed. We were all looking at all of our shops closing down. I don't know why I say our shops like it's a, like I own a theater, but all the theaters are in a lot of trouble. All the, I mean, y'all know all the performing art, performing halls and
venues, you know, they're everything. All,
yeah, everyone's hurting. So we did a COVID relief effort. A woman named Bridget McCarthy, who is another one of us, artist organizers that did some electoral politics. She's a writer and does a lot of work with incarcerated folks. And she runs that organization now. Almost flipped a R+10 House district in Connecticut and turned down going to run the second campaign to go take it, you know, for real, to stay here and do work in Atlanta, because there's a lot of good organizing that happens in Georgia. And she was just, you know, excited to be in that space.
How can progressives like leverage the situation? Cause now, you know, I mean, theoretically, if it's a lot, it's a lot better of a situation, I would imagine, to have to fight against liberals than to fight against Republicans and fascists and authoritarians and stuff. So now that we can actually have a debate theoretically, because, you know, I mean, the DNC do be on some fuck shit too, I said it, but like theoretically we can, you know, at least have these debates. It's not like we're bringing these high progressive ideals to fucking the doorstep of Trump and Mitch McConnell anymore. So what can we do in this, in these next few years, to actually take advantage of that as progressives?
Okay. On some real shit, I have always believed that it is morally acceptable as progressives to work with what would be considered, you know, what the establishment, moderates, whatever. But I think everyone knows what we're talking about. And I think it is important to make a distinction between moderates and power. It's okay to work with power to a degree in places like Georgia, where the stakes are high. You know, like, Democrats here are functionally very weak. Like, the way this shit is supposed to work is like what Mariah and Tim and Russell and Mayor Gertz did here. And I'm sorry, I just left someone out, didn't I, Mariah?
Spencer.
And Spencer. It's supposed to work like that. You have people that have built independent networks that agree to come literally combine their networks to raise money to go do some good shit that we all collectively agree on, and you earn the trust in the way you go about the negotiations. It's okay to do that here for the most part. That conversation changes entirely once this is a blue state. At that point, if we do not have, the only way to do this is that over the next 2.5-3 years, we're all swirling in the current together. And that wagon is circling. And as we're circling, we decide who we're going to join hands with. We need to have our independent power structures in place by that time, so that whoever the person is that grabs and holds, you know, holds on with the other people, doesn't have to rely on them if the other person lets go. So we need it by that time. If you don't have it by that time, there will be not even need to talk about it, subconscious cultural confusion, and there'll be a glass ceiling. And there's not going to be no record of it. There's nothing like that. But we just won't be able to get past a certain point in the tiers going up. It's just going to stop. And that's the way that shit works. So, like, we have to have our structures in place no later than 2024. And when we talk about someone that's progressive having the responsibility to run for office, whatever that office may be, what we are talking about is that, hey, we have this window of time. If you agree that we have this window of time, if that's what the timeline feels like in your soul, then someone has to do it. And if there is, like, if you can find someone else and support them, cool. Absolutely do that. If you can't find someone else, then you have a responsibility. That's how we get most people to run for office. That has to happen. At the same time, though, during these next 2 years, Stacey Abrams is coming for the governor's mansion. And to be clear on what that means, because people seem to not, I don't know how dumb everyone else in the country must be, but if you don't know this, if Stacey Abrams is the governor of Georgia, Stacey Abrams functionally decides who the next two presidents are. Like, in terms of political credibility, like, as these southern states go blue, the person whose opinion is going to matter the most is not going to be Jim Clyburn. And at that point in time, whoever, like, you're going to have the southern states in the Democratic primary to win the presidential primary. You're going to have to do it. Also, if we notice, the last two presidential campaigns in the Democratic primary, that's what fucking happened. So, like with Bernie, I'm not mad at Bernie for any ability or inability to not be himself. I'm mad at Bernie because that was an undisputed fact, and he did nothing to come and change that reality. Now, his pivot to the first serious presidential level respectable engagement and investment into organizing in the Latinx community is incredible. So this is not to, there's actually a finer, like, political philosophical divide professionally in politics and Democratic Party politics on that answer. And, like, that makes it sound sometimes like more than what it is, but ultimately these people are the people to do the hiring and the firing. So they're like minute opinion about something that they only think about for 10 seconds. If that just gets calcified because they never come back and think about it again, later on it does have real impact. So you have to think about those things. So for the next 2 years, first off, this state just saved the goddamn country. That's a fucking fact. And anybody who does not recognize that will not be allowed to come do work in Georgia. Why would we work with those people when they don't even fuck with us enough to respect us? That means people here have more value and can step up and do things.
So, Paul, how can we keep up with your work and the work of folks that you fuck with?
So in Councilman Khalid is running for mayor, as I said, South Fulton. I pretty much wouldn't do much of anything if Khalid didn't fuck with it. You can find him at Khalid Cares, K-H-A-L-I-D cares.com. Maria Del Rosario Palacios runs an organization called Gainesville Familias Unidas. You can look them up online. Michelle Sanchez, you can find all of us on social media. And if you want to get involved in anything I'm doing, this year is going to be pretty North Georgia centric. So just be prepared to come up.
As for me, I'm about to take a fucking break. A nigga like me is about to check out and not follow anything election related for at least like 3 or 4 days. I just need a fucking break. As a matter of fact, next week, we're going to be doing an episode that I've been waiting for a long, long time. But we're going to talk about black people and comic book, sci-fi, fantasy, nerd shit. I don't even know what we're going to call the episode yet. I'm thinking like blurredom or like black nerddom or like the revenge of the blurreds. I don't know. We'll figure it out. But that's what we're going to be doing next week.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about some of the intersections between like black nerddom and like black like fantasy as like tied to Afrofuturism and its political implications. And so it should be a really good episode next week. I, too, am taking a weekend to sleep hard. Can't wait to not answer my phone. No one's going to hear from me. Everyone's going to think I died. It's going to be great. But yeah, we'll see you all next week. I'm Lingua Franca.
I'm Dope Knife, and we are Waiting on Reparations. See you next week. Waiting on Reparations is a production of iHeartRadio.
Listen to Waiting on Reparations on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.